Our scripture reading this morning is taken from 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 to 4. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves have received from God. This morning, we're happy to have Nicole Bromley with us. She's an international speaker, author of a new book called Hush, Moving from Silence to Healing After Childhood Sexual Abuse. Nicole is the founder and director of One Voice Enterprises. She's a national spokesperson on the issue of sexual abuse. She's been frequently featured on radio and TV broadcasts, recently interviewed on the Montel Williams Show. She speaks to thousands of students every year, and we're particularly happy to have her here with us this morning. Please welcome Nicole Bromley.
Thank you. Thanks. Good morning. Thank you so much. Well, it's just an honor to be here with you today. I'm not sure where you all are from, whether you're from a big city or a small town. If you're anything like me, you grew up in a really, really small town. The place I'm from, just next door in Ohio, we had one street light. Oh, there's the Buckeyes here? Okay, all right. Cool. The place I'm from, we had one street light, we had one store, and we had more cows than we had people. Yeah. I don't know your family's background, whether you're an only child, maybe you're one of 10, whether you come from a single-parent home, a two-parent home, maybe you never knew your parents at all. I don't know your values, your dreams, or your fears. We could be the two most different people in the world, but the issue that I'm presenting today spans all borders and undermines all relationships and speaks in the universal language of human emotion. So as I share the story of hope with you this morning, I think you'll discover that we aren't so different after all. I want you to imagine with me a 12-year-old girl with long brown hair, hazel eyes, and a big heart encircling the name Zach Morris on her left hand. Every day after school, this little girl would run up her gravel driveway to her house, throw her lunchbox on the table, and go to the freezer to get a big bowl of ice cream filled to the brim with chocolate syrup. She would take that bowl of ice cream with both of her hands to her hot pink beanbag placed on the red carpet in her bedroom. The walls were painted pink and covered in posters of ballerinas, basketball players, and the new kids on the block. Okay. Every day, this little girl would do her homework, finish her homework, off to practice for one of the three sports she played. On the weekend, she would attend her local church youth group meeting. She would go to her cousin's house to play Nintendo. So even as she grew up, this little girl continued to involve herself in her activities, continue to do her homework, continue to spend time with her friends. In many ways, she was like the poster child of her small community, a straight-A student, captain of three varsity sports, homecoming queen, student council president. She lived the perfect life. And at home, things seemed just as perfect. She lived with her mom and her stepdad. Her mom worked from home. They were very close. Her stepfather was self-employed. They spent a lot of time doing father-daughter activities. And she also had a stepsister who was exactly 5 months and 5 days younger than her. They were best friends. So it was a family that provided a caring, supportive environment for this little girl. A perfect girl, a perfect family, a perfect life. Now I want you to imagine with me that same girl wishing that she were someone else. Imagine her planning how to run away from home. Imagine her planning her own funeral. This same girl who had the perfect life, perfect family, and the perfect neighborhood, who was not afraid of strangers, was afraid to come home each and every day. She often had horrible nightmares, and she often woke up crying. Why the nightmares? Why the crying? She cried because she was miserable, and she was miserable because she had a secret. I was miserable. I was the girl who came to school every day with the biggest smile on her face, but I was that same girl who was afraid inside. I had a secret. I wasn't sure why I had to keep it. But I do know that I will never forget the summer of 1994. I was 14 years old, looking forward to my freshman year of high school, and I already told you that I lived way out in the country and we had all those cows. Well, we had to feed them. So in my community, we had lots and lots of fields of grass. And you're going to think I'm a big hillbilly right now. that's okay. But when I was like seriously, probably like 8 or 9 years old, my stepdad bought this huge honking mama tractor, okay? And when I was like 8 or 9, he taught me how to drive this thing, and it was my job every weekend to go out and mow these fields that we had. So I remember one day, it was really nice outside, I decided to tan myself while I mowed. So I put on my bathing suit, I was out there maybe 15 minutes or so, and I saw my stepdad coming toward me with a glass of lemonade. So I stopped my tractor, waited for him to reach me. Now the next thing that I'm going to tell you might seem really weird, or it might not seem weird to you at all, but I can tell you that I will never forget it. I remember drinking the entire glass of lemonade and thanking him, and I noticed that he was staring at my chest, and I remember they got really uncomfortable, so I gave him the glass back right away, but then he made a dirty comment that was totally off the wall and disgusting, and I remember that I got really angry, and I took off, and I continued mowing, and he pouted all the way back to the house. About an hour later, he came back out, offered me another drink. I said I didn't want anything. Then only a few minutes later, I looked up, and I saw my stepfather standing on our front porch staring at me with binoculars. And I remember trying to drive where there were trees so he couldn't see me, but he didn't put them down. He followed me with them wherever I was driving. I remember I was crying, and I didn't want him to see me, and it was then that I decided I wanted to end my life right then and there. I didn't want to deal with the harassment anymore. So I put the tractor into the highest gear, and I decided I was going to drive head-on into this huge tree at the end of our field. And as I got closer and closer to that big tree, I was fantasizing about never seeing my stepdad again. I wanted to end my life and his torment. The last thought I had was of my mom, how much it would hurt her. So I swerved, and obviously my life didn't end that day, but neither did the torment. It was supposed to be the happiest summer of my life. We were going on a dream vacation to the Bahamas, my mom, my stepdad, my stepsister, and I, and I remember that my stepdad had been acting very bizarre the entire trip. Even my mom noticed it. One day it was just he and I swimming in the ocean, and as I came back to the beach where my mom was laying, she kept asking me what was wrong, but as always, I said I would just tell her later. That night, I was brushing my teeth in our hotel room, and my stepfather came out of the bathroom. I'm not sure what you guys call them around here. I've been to a lot of places. In Texas, they say skivvies. In Tennessee, they say draws. Where I'm from in Ohio, they say tidy whities. My very first year of speaking, I don't know if I can say this in chapel, but there was this kid sitting in the front row, and he yelled out, "Cookie covers." I was like, okay. Weird. Anyway, that was all that he was wearing, which was disgusting to begin with, but what's totally wrong was the way that he touched me that night. And I know that for some of you, these two incidents in and of themselves might seem like minor situations in the life of a family, but for me, they were a turning point in my life, marking a beginning and an end. So how did these events bring an end to my journey? Well, it was about a week or so after returning home from that vacation. My mom and I were in the car going to pick up my stepsister to bring her home with us for the weekend. Our conversation started off as it normally did about each other's day. My mom brought up some current events, and all of a sudden it was silent. Traffic light turned red, the car stopped. And as I sat there waiting for the light to turn green, I kept imagining what it would be like to tell my mom about the things my stepfather had been saying and doing to me for so many years. My mom was the first to break the silence. She told me about her desire to go back to college, and she talked with my stepdad about this. He became very angry and violent, acting in ways he'd never done before. And then she asked me, "Has he ever done anything strange around you?" I was unsure as to whether or not it was really wrong. I might have even thought that it was my fault. But I knew that if I were ever going to tell my mom that this was the time, I remember the traffic light turned green, my mom hit the accelerator, we were late, it was warm outside, I started sweating, my stomach was tied up in knots, and all of a sudden, I told her. My mom slammed on the brakes and pulled the car over to the side of the road, and for the first time in my life, I knew it was wrong. Then she asked me if he had ever touched me. Memories I didn't even realize I had came flooding back into my mind, and did he ever touch me? that question brought with it a memory of our summer vacation just 2 years earlier before I entered junior high. Another scene on the beach, another scene on the water. Just like the summer of 94, another family vacation I wanted to forget. A memory of him grabbing me, holding me in the water while he touched me under my bathing suit. I remember his words, "Do you want to go up to the hotel room?" I said, "No, I want to swim." He said, "We don't have to tell anyone, just come on." I said, "No, I want to lay in the sand." He said, "We'll keep it our little secret." I pulled away from him. He was angry. He punished me by not speaking to me for the rest of the day. Did he ever touch me? The same vacation, the same night, he told me he needed to get some things out of our van. He needed my help. I went with him. I had no idea what was in store for me. It was just beginning to get dark. He told me to hop in the back seat and look for the cooler. He hopped in the back seat too. He said, "Sit up straight and don't move around." Then it happened again. I remember feeling really scared, but he said that I was very special. He told me that if I loved him, I would let him. Did he ever touch me? Well, I may not have known the answer when my mom first asked the question that day, but as I saw her reaction to the things that I was telling her had happened, the answer was pretty obvious. I was a victim of childhood sexual abuse, and I know that even today, with all the things in the media constantly talking to us about sexual violence, this still seems like an obscure crime to many of you. That's because it is so often kept a secret in our society. You know that over 1 million children under the age of 18 are currently being sexually abused by a family member in the United States. Maybe you're thinking this doesn't apply to you. Maybe you think this happens only to poor city girls living in immoral families with bad parents and no friends. You're right. But it also happens in every other type of home and every other type of family. You know, sexual abuse cuts across all boundaries. Male, female, Christian, non-Christian, black, white, rich, poor. One in every three girls and one in every six boys are sexually abused by their 18th birthday. Those kids have names. Those kids have faces. You know, look at me. I'm a statistic. I hate statistics. I'm here today because I was that one in three girls. I'm here today because of my little secret. Well, did he ever touch me? My mom got really quiet. She was holding back the tears, and we were now pulling in the driveway to pick up my stepsister, who was already outside waiting for us. So my mom quickly said she didn't know what we were going to do, but not to worry, she would take care of it. That was Friday night. We left the following Monday. That night, we prayed and believed together that however things turned out, it would be the best for everyone involved. Mom reported the abuse to Children's Services. We were interviewed. We found out later the next day that my stepfather had denied everything. The days that followed were the most frightening days of my life. I knew that if he found us, he would kill us. The phone rang off the hook everywhere we tried to hide. And probably the most frightening day of my life occurred on the Thursday of that week. I remember the night before sitting up in bed with my mom. And I was crying, and she was holding me and just kept telling me that God was going to protect us. And the next day, it was so nice outside, and I was tired of being cooped up in all these attics and basements of our friends and family, hiding from him. And so I told my grandma, who we were staying with at the time, and my mom, that I wanted to go for a quick walk around the block, and so they agreed. And as we were walking down the sidewalk, I looked up, and I saw my stepdad's big blue van coming towards us on the street. And I yelled at my mom and grandma to run because it was him. My grandma running. Hilarious. Like, I wasn't laughing back then, but every time I tell that part, I always think about it and I laugh. But anyways, so we ran for the library, which was just around the corner. And my mom was right. There's no question that God was protecting us that day. He didn't even see us. And then the following Tuesday, we stayed with some friends, and their father took his three kids and me to a store, and as we came back, we saw a police car leaving the driveway. So he passed the driveway, drove us around the corner, and dropped us off at their grandparents' house. I stayed there for a while, but I ended up walking back by myself to see what my mom was doing and why the police had been there. I knew something was wrong as soon as I walked in the door. I went over to the table where my mom was sitting. She was very quiet, and I said, "What's wrong, Mom? Why were the police here?" She said, "He shot himself." I said, "He's dead." She said, "Yeah." I remember running around that house screaming, "I hate him, I hate him, I hate him." You know, I was so furious that he would never have to face what he had done to me. Of course, you know, I would never face sexual abuse again. But at the same time, I felt like I was left feeling alone, dirty, damaged. I felt like everything was my fault. I thought if people knew this about me, they wouldn't like me. So it was then that I decided and I vowed I would never again tell my secret. And here we were, really facing funeral plans and just an unknown future, my mom and I. At the same time, my mom really became my hero. I was amazed at her strength, her faith that God was going to protect us was such an incredible example to me at a critical time in my life. And I remember reading Romans 8:28, "For we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him." And more than that, Jeremiah 29:11, which we read earlier, "I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." You know, I clung to that verse. I knew that it was true. It was the end of my journey. I was set free from that life of abuse. I had hope in a future, but it was also the beginning of my journey. I became a high school freshman. My mom became a college freshman. Things were looking better, but I was separated from my stepsister. I've only seen her 3 times in the past, 13 years or something. And kids at school started calling me daddy's girl. And to this day, I still can't remember when or how it all started. But I do know that when I was in 5th grade, there was a lady who came to our school and showed us this video about childhood sexual abuse. And I remember sitting on the library floor with all of my little 5th grade friends and my boyfriend, Chucky. And I remember thinking to myself, this really seems a lot like what's happening to me. But I wasn't sure. You know, I think the question that people often would want to ask me is, how could all these things be happening and no one see it or suspect it? You know, why weren't you sure? Sometimes people place part of the blame on the victim for allowing abuse or maybe an unhealthy dating relationship to continue over a long stretch of time. But what they don't realize is that an abuser seeks control and knows exactly how to silence you. They convince the victim that it's their fault. Do you remember the pink bedroom with the red carpet? Well, it was right across the hallway from the bathroom in our house. So after a shower, I would wrap up in a towel, run 3 feet across the hallway, be in my bedroom closet, drying off, looking for something to wear, and I would turn around and my stepdad would be in my room staring at me. And I remember I would get so angry. I would say, "What are you doing in here? Get out of my room." But he would get mad too and say that I had somehow asked him to come in because the door wasn't latched properly, or it wasn't locked, or because I ran across the hall wearing a towel, that this was somehow a sign that I wanted him to come in. And I know that for many of you, this sounds pretty crazy. But hearing something like this as a little girl from your stepfather who you love and trust, time after time after time, I began to believe that maybe he was right. I thought that there was something about me that had deserved it or somehow asked for it. Of course, the reality is that children can't stop abuse from occurring. He said he wanted us to be really close. He said he wanted it to be our little secret. He told me it was his responsibility to teach me things about my body and that all good dads do that for their special daughters. I knew he loved me and would never mean to hurt me. After all, he wanted to be closer to me than my real dad was. He said, "All little girls want this. No one ever talks about it." He said it was normal. I loved and trusted him. I had no reason not to. He told me my mom would get really jealous if she knew what we did together. She would hate me. I would never see her again. I would have to live with someone else. He said no one would ever believe me because I was just a little girl and he was a very popular man in our town. He made me believe I had no choice. He made me believe I had no voice, and he made me believe that there was no way out. But I'm here today because there is a way out. You know, after an entire childhood of all of that kind of stuff going on in my life, I can honestly stand here today at 27 years old. I know I look 19, but go with it. 27, and tell you that I have found freedom and healing, and I'm honored to be in a campus setting like this where I can tell you that I know through and through that true and genuine healing is only found through a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And you know, when I was 15 years old, I went to a summer teen camp in Cleveland, Ohio, and at the time, no one at my school, no one in my youth group, not even my best friend, knew my secret. It had been a year since I had vowed never to tell it again. And the last day of that camp, I got up in front of about 300 kids, and I told my story for the first time. And you know how when you go to camp and you like make all these new friends and you have pen pals and stuff and you give each other your address? Well, you guys probably are like, here's my Facebook profile, something like that. But back in my day, like we had to write with pen and paper. Crazy, huh? But so I got home from that camp and I started receiving letters upon letters from other kids at that camp telling me their story for the first time. It was that same week I remember opening my Bible and coming across 2 Corinthians 1, 3, and 4, which we just read. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion, the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others in any trouble with that same comfort we ourselves have received from God. And I knew that it was God that was comforting me. I felt it. You know, every time I read the word, any time I listened to worship music or just prayed, I felt safe. And I never felt safe in my life. I knew that it was God that was comforting me, and I knew that he had a plan for my life. I want you to hear me today. If you hear anything I say, hear this. That no matter the circumstances in your life, no matter where you've been, what you've done, or what has been done to you, God promises to take the pain and use everything in your life for his good. And although I know that most of you have not been sexually abused, I do know that I am not alone in this room. And for those of you who may walk in my shoes, I ask you to help me break the silence surrounding sexual abuse and rape. Breaking the silence was one of the most courageous things I think I've ever done in my life, but choosing to allow God to walk with me through that healing process was the other. If you have ever been sexually violated, you are not alone. 1 in 3 girls and 1 in 6 boys are sexually abused by their 18th birthday. 1 in 5 girls, 1 in 10 guys are sexually assaulted during college, 90% involving alcohol or drugs, 84% committed by someone the victim knows. Never believe that sexual abuse or rape happens in some other town, some other community, some other campus, some other home, because I promise you, it does happen everywhere. I believe that God's called me here today to help break the ice around these sensitive topics that we often don't talk about. But I also believe that he's calling each of you to take this message to the next level, whether it's in your own life, the life of a friend, or just the life of this campus community. My challenge for you today is this. In order for us to have a day without sexual abuse or rape, we've got to be willing to hear these little secrets among us and stand up to those who are committing these acts. Someone you know and love may be a sexual perpetrator. Maybe it's someone in this room. If it's you, I invite you to make an important decision this morning. Confessing this secret to someone that you trust, committing to healing and purity in your private thought life, your time on the computer, and in your relationships. And someone you know and love has a secret. Maybe it's you. I invite you to make that important decision today too, telling your secret to someone that you trust. Let this be the beginning of your healing journey like it was for me. And some of you may have never had to face anything that I've mentioned today, but chances are you have a friend who has. I invite you to be the one who will reach out to others on this campus, who won't allow others to be mistreated, who will take a stand and make a difference in someone else's life starting today. Be that listening ear. And finally, I know that some of the stories I told you about my past were really hard to hear. But I want you to imagine for a brief moment of your life how hard they might be for someone to live. How many of you are willing to help me put a voice to this voiceless crime that's sweeping across our nation? And how many of you are willing to surrender your own past, no matter what that entails, in order for God to use it for his good? I'm not asking for your sympathy. I'm asking for your strength. Thank you so much. I'll be at my book table. I hope to see you there. God bless you.